Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL and some headlines going down there. We'll be, of course, discussing Thursday Night Football. We'll have Jack's Pack, which is our NFL betting segment. We'll talk about the WNBA as they're barreling towards their playoffs. And lastly, we will have Jack's Hot Take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This show is on Pandora, it's on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to like, follow, and turn on any post notifications for all Just In Time Sports social medias. Oh, well, all of your favorite social medias. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get your lines open.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show, season 5, episode 21. Oh, one of my favorite shows, as you guys can tell. When I have a lot of energy like this, I'm up and I'm active, which is normal. But one of our favorite shows of the year, and it's the release show. So this show is being recorded right now as we speak, around 2 p.m. local time. As soon as I get it done, it will be a quick edit and then it'll be out to you guys as well. One of my favorite shows. I love instant release shows because you get the information as soon as I have it. If something were to break in the next 45 minutes to an hour, it would be in this show. So you would hear my reaction to it immediately instead of hearing my reaction to it tomorrow or, you know, this, that, and the third. You hear my reaction to it immediately. So my phone's next to me. It's sitting here charging. So if anything breaks, we will, of course, throw the rundown out and discuss it if it's big enough. Of course, we will talk about it fairly immediately. But let's jump into the show. A bit of housekeeping news before we do. Make sure that you like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to like, follow, and turn on any post notifications for Just In Time Sports social media wherever you like social media. X, Instagram, Facebook, the stunt, Threads, whatever your favorite social media is out of that group. Make sure you definitely get on the Just In Time Sports and join the Just In Time Sports family on those social medias. But anyway, let's start off with our A-block. Our A-block starts off with the NFL. We're going to start off the field first, and then we're going to come on the field. Of course, the NFL is never a league that truly ever stops off the field. It's one of those situations where you have a lot of guys. It's one of the bigger leagues in American sports. It's actually, I think, the biggest player league in majors of professional sports. Now, if you count the minor leagues as baseball, but think about basketball. Basketball has 15 people on a roster. There's 30 teams. It's 450 guys, I think, is the number every year. The WNBA is 12 by 12, 144. The NHL, I think it's in the 20s. There's only 30 teams, though. Basketball, the NFL has 53 men on the roster, 32 teams, plus the practice squad. So you're looking at thousands of players at a time in the NFL. So just percentage-wise, you're looking at a higher chance, and you look at what these men are usually made of. These men are usually made of, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're more aggressive. They literally hit people for a living. So there's a tendency at times to have incidents occur whenever you're dealing with NFL players. It's just the way it's been set up over the past few years. Like I say, if you look at the number of professionals, look at the number of professional sports, they have probably about a quarter total professional athletes in this country in terms of our major sports, hockey, basketball. Think about it, two basketball rosters put together is half of a football roster. That's not even counting the practice squad. So if you're looking at just the tendency, it's more than likely going to be an NFL player in incidents, just the way the numbers have broken out, right? It's the way it comes apart, way it comes together. And so we have our latest incident with an NFL player, this one involving police. We see body cam footage of Tyreek Hill. So I'm sure you guys have heard every single opinion on it, every single viewpoint on it. You know, the way media is set up now, you pretty much hear what you want to hear. And the reason why I say that is you can choose to listen to a Fox. It's going to give you Fox News is going to give you one perspective juxtaposed to CNN, juxtaposed to what you see on Twitter, as opposed to what you see on, I can't even think of that social media app that Donald Trump uses. But, you know, you get all these different social medias and all these different opinions, and you could cater what you see based on what you want to see. Now, I mean, personally, I do my best to keep any reporting 50-50. Now, what you see on, what you hear on this podcast, what you see and hear on the YouTube show, JTS After Dark, produced by IMS Productions, what you see and hear on those things do not reflect the reporting side. And so what I want you guys to understand is that what I say on here does not necessarily say on there. Because again, I'm just simply reporting the news. What your opinion on the news is up to you. I'm simply giving you the information. So I want that to be pointed out before we move on. But anyway, back to the Tyreek Hill thing. So this was a situation, and the body cam, one of the angles of the body cam footage is shown on my social media platforms. Tyreek Hill gets pulled over by the Miami police. Now, it was reportedly at first over a traffic violation. Now, that has since gotten convoluted and misconstrued into what it possibly could have been. But it was reportedly a traffic violation at first. Now, this ultimately revolves in Tyreek Hill getting thrown on the ground, four police officers surrounding him. You see a different area where he goes, oh, no, that's one of the star players for the Dolphins. Like, this isn't a regular black guy. This could be one of the star plays. This is one of the star plays for the Dolphins. It reminded a lot of people of Scottie Scheffler outside of the Masters at like 4 or 5 in the morning. He was heading into the Masters and gets arrested, I think, again, traffic violation. And he was, you know, seen, he was heard yelling back and forth, and there was an incident. And there was an incident in this case. Tyreek Hill is calling for the firing of the police officers involved. One of the police officers was placed on administrative either leave or duty. It did change depending on where you look. But he was basically removed from the streets following this incident. And it just kind of feels like it's another incident. As a black man in this country, it felt like another incident. Now, thank the Lord, this one wasn't deadly. Tyreek Hill wasn't even seriously harmed. He played that day, had a great game. We even did a handcuff celebration after scoring a touchdown. But it wasn't just Tyreek Hill. Calais Campbell was involved. They ended up, I think, putting cuffs on Calais Campbell. They ultimately called a third teammate. He was involved, and it was a situation where it could have been de-escalated on both sides. I will say that. I won't say, oh, Tyreek Hill was a peaceful citizen, quiet as a church mouse, and got roughed up. Like, I'm not going to say that. But at the same time, I'm not going to hold a football player, in this case a civilian, to the same standard as a professional whose job primarily is de-escalation, who failed at that job. It's no different than if you're a teacher. You know, that kid isn't going to be held to the same standard as the adult. You know, and that's a little bit of a heart. It's a little bit of a not the best linear example because Tyreek Hill is a grown man. But You know, this is no different than when like an intern messes up versus one of somebody who's been seasoned. Like, I'm not going to hold you to the same standard. You don't have the training. You're not held under that same code. You as a person are held under a code to where you're thinking about you. You as a police officer should not be thinking in that same manner. You should think about the good of the situation. De-escalation is number one. Number one priority, that was failed. So, like I said, this was one of our, I don't want to say warning shot incidents, in terms of it was not deadly. There was no, you know, injuries to Tyreek Hill. There was no, you know, back alley situation. There was, you know what I'm saying? It was one of our better ones. However, it was still something that was way too far in the direction that it went. And so hopefully that is rectified in the not so distant future. Like I said, Tyreek Hill's calling for removal. I'm not sure I would go removal in this case. Now, internal investigation comes out with more details. Yes, I obviously removed them. Do I think they should be off the streets for 6 months to a year? Yes. Do I think if they have any level above entry level, they should be faced with automatic demotion? Probably a couple of notches, yes, because you have to make this punitive to officers to act this way. Automatic firing, I think whoever's slammed to the ground should be gone. Anybody else who was not directly involved, however, did not step in to remove those police officers, should be bumped down a couple levels, all the way maybe down to desk duty or something, and their pay should reflect that. But that is something that, you know, is not for me to decide. That is something I would look for. I totally understand Tyreek Hill calling for the removal of those officers. If I was in his situation, I probably would too. But that is something that we're going to keep our eye on. Statements have been released all over the place. Videos been out all over the place. So we're definitely going to keep our eye on it. This is not the last you will see and hear of this. I'm sure of it. So we're going to keep you guys very, you know, up to date on what happens in this case or future incident. And our next incident with an NFL player off the field. It feels like I'm saying this for like the 28th time. Deshaun Watson is being accused again, this time by Jane Doe. She has chosen to remain nameless. Although, I'm, you know, the attorneys know those involved, you know, but she has publicly filed under the name Jane Doe. The details are interesting, is the best way I can think. I mean, the details are disturbing. I'm going to be honest with you. They're disturbing if true. And again, Deshaun allegedly, it's allegedly at this point, his lawyer, Tony Busby, has stated that there's a video that they're going to have that's going to get this case, you know, if anyone's going to take care of this case. But allegations are disturbing. And interesting was a poor word earlier, but they are disturbing. It's the typical Deshaun Watson stuff. It's inappropriate touching. It's forced upon. It's accusations of rape. Like, it is standard Deshaun Watson stuff. It's anything that if it's anybody else, they're automatically on the exempt list. And for Deshaun, it feels like we've reached the point in his life story, in his career arc, where it's, oh my God, expect it's a bad word, but it's not shocking anymore. It's not something that we look at and go, oh man, Deshaun Watson's wilding out. It's like, Deshaun's Deshaun. Now, this is an accusation from 2020, I believe. This is not recent. Well, it is recent, but I'm saying this is not, you know, since he's been a Brown, this is in the same era as the other accusations. You know, he's not going to be suspended by the team until the legal process plays out. He's not going to go into the exempt list. According to his owner, according to his agent, their lawyer, rather, there's a video that's going to, I guess, exonerate him. But this has got to come to an end if you're Deshaun Watson. You're playing piss poorly for whatever reason. I think he took a year-long absence from the hardest position in professional sports. And you're seeing the result of said hard, you know, position and not doing it regularly. When Deshaun Watson left the field for the last time as a Houston Texan, he was inarguably a top five quarterback, a very widely considered top three quarterback, and an arguable best quarterback. The only quarterback you can say definitively was better than him is Patrick Mahomes, who came back on him in the playoff game. Everybody else, Deshaun Watson, you could make a real case was better than at the time. Now, he's a disaster. Forget the money. Forget the trade assets. Quarterback, purely watching him play quarterback, he is awful. I mean, he is downright, like, bad. Like, it's not even a situation where it's funny to say or it's enjoyable or this, that, and the third. He is not good at the quarterback position right now. And the Cleveland Browns are suffering because of it. I mean, they've, you know, and they can't even financially begin to contemplate to move on from him for another two seasons. Because right now, if they were to, let's say, cut him, they would be paying more dead cap, twice as much dead cap as Denver paid to remove Russell Wilson. Right, so you're not even in a position where you could get rid of him in the event he continues to play poorly. You've got to ride this out. Now, could his poor play be a result of the fact that he probably feels, you know, fairly untouchable? I had all those accusations. I did all this different stuff. And he was able still to waltz right in and get the biggest contract in NFL history, the most guaranteed money in NFL history, and have his pick of the litter in terms of where he wanted to go. People forget, and you know, and people talk about now that, oh, it was the worst trade in NFL history, blah, 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 blah. People forgot that when Deshaun was, you know, able to come back from his accusations, he was able to go to multiple locations. He wanted Atlanta. Atlanta didn't come in with the right guarantee money. Although he was still going to go to Atlanta, I think for 180 of the 230, he was going to Atlanta. And then ultimately he decides, you know, Cleveland comes in with the full 230. Nobody's willing to match it. He heads to Cleveland, but he took a visit with the Saints. He was headed to Atlanta. He took a visit with the new Texans regime. You know, he had multiple locations he could have gone, and he ultimately chose Cleveland, mainly as a financial decision, but he chooses Cleveland nonetheless. And so now you look at him now, and it's like, what's going on? He looks unsure of himself. He looks unconfident. He looks like he doesn't know what he's doing out there, which, considering as a guy who is, you know, naturally confident, naturally swaggy, and in a position where confidence is everything, this is huge for Deshaun Watson to not be himself. Except I think these accusations have something to do with it. He's getting booed and protested at home. There's no real comfort zone for him right now. So I definitely think he should look a little bit better once he gets his confidence down. But switching gears to on the field, I'm going to start off with some individual players, and I'm going to shift to some teams. Joe Burrow, his wrist injury has been the headline of the past few days. And one of those things is his wrist. It was a video of him appearing to struggle to pick up a water bottle, and he was flexing the wrist constantly throughout the game. This, that, and the third. Now, he said he wasn't struggling to pick up a water bottle. He was just picking it up. And that he is fine physically. And so I think it's one of those things where when you come off an injury, you've got to test that thing. Whatever that thing is, you have to test that thing in a variety of ways. And I think that his testing of that thing is that you see him flex, you see him moving around. There's a kid on my team, my high school team, that he broke his leg. And even when he was healthy, you could tell that he broke his leg like his eighth grade year, set out his ninth grade year, and just told me rather recently that he doesn't think about his leg anymore. I mean, and then we're thinking 2 years later, and he had to have a real game, get hit, and be like, I'm fine, in order for him to not think about his leg anymore. So you look at a guy like Joe Burrow, who's constantly injured. A right wrist is his, you know, is the moneymaker. His right arm is how he makes his money. And so thinking about that constantly is something that I imagine is not enjoyable, especially considering that you're looking at a team that struggled against a not so great Patriots team. I mean, 10 offensive points. I get it. Jamar Chase missed pretty much all offseason. I understand, but you have to be able to produce, and they couldn't do anything. Man, the Patriots defense is going to be real. They're going to do that to a lot of people. But they have to be able to muster 17 points to beat a Patriots team that at no point was offensively dominant. At no point were they rolling offensively and putting a bunch of pressure on the Bengals. So that's got to get fixed up if you're in Cincinnati. CJ Stroud versus Anthony Richardson. What a show of physical quarterback prowess. Yeah, CJ Stroud, who took the league by storm last year, who immediately shows up and he stopped seven in the league. He threw a couple of beautiful passes to Stephon Diggs for big first downs, a couple of balls over the middle. That was huge for first downs as well. A couple of big touchdowns to Diggs. CJ Stroud played a hell of a game, and it definitely showed that he was one guy who was looking to take his game to the next level. And then Anthony Richardson, my God, he threw arguably one of the best passes we've ever seen in the NFL. 68 yards in the air, not really having his feet set, getting hit, low-key fading away on a line. It was a piss rocket. Drops right into the bucket for the touchdown. I mean, it's one of the best throws I've ever seen in my life. Already up there for play and throw of the year. It was insane how far and how talented Anthony Richardson was to not only make that throw, but to even dream that throw to be possible. And then the rookie quarterbacks struggled in their debuts. Bo Nix was bad. Caleb Williams was bad. And Bo Nix honestly could have had some help from his teammates. He could have been a little bit better. Caleb Williams was awful. He adjusted to preseason speed well. He did not adjust to the NFL speed well. He was picked apart. And then Jaden Daniels just didn't do enough. He played against a pretty good offense going against him. So I'm sure there was pressure to continue to score the ball and make the most of every single opportunity, which he definitely tried to do. It just wasn't enough. Like I said, against a pretty good offensive team, it's rare that you get a rookie that'll show up and be dominant, but he was not. He was no different than anything else. He was not dominant at all. Had his moments, had his flashes, but really wasn't anything special. And of course, you know, J.J. McCarthy's out for the season with the Minnesota Vikings. But we have two teams that I want to discuss, and I can kind of take them at the same time. The New York Jets and the Carolina Panthers. The Jets are bad. The Panthers are awful. Let's start off with the Panthers. They lost 47-10 to the New Orleans Saints. You heard me correctly. 47-10 in an NFL game in week one. So you're not even tanking. I can't even say, oh, but the practice squad guys. No. That was your team. In week one, you lost 47-10 to a Saints team that might win seven games all season. 47-10. A bad idea, bad omen. But the Panthers are bad. The Panthers are one of the worst rosters in the NFL. They have one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. They have one of the worst coaches in the NFL. The GM's not awful, although he is being awful right now. Generally, he's all right. But, I mean, the Panthers are just bad. Like, they're really bad. Like, they are god-awful. And then the Jets are bad. I don't know how bad the Jets are or how good the Niners are, because the Jets physically just were destroyed by the Niners. And the Niners play the Bills tonight, and we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. My apologies. The Dolphins play the Bills in a couple of minutes. Again, we're going to talk about that. Dolphins play the Bills tonight, and we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes, of course. But when you're looking at, you know, those two teams, Panthers and the Jets. You have the Panthers, who everybody thinks is going to be bad, and so they're living up to it. And then the Jets, who everybody thinks is going to be really good, got some AFC East predictions, got drubbed by the Niners to open it up. So I'm hoping both of those teams were a fluke. I like competitive football games, and having uncompetitive teams kind of ruins it. Oh, the Giants, also bad. That offense, terrible. If it isn't Malik Nabers, they don't know what they're going to do with their life. Daniel Jones, awful. He needs to definitely, the Giants get on the call with somebody and try and bring in another quarterback, because Daniel Jones is disrespectfully bad. But up next, we're going to chat about Thursday Night Football. So we got the Bills at the Jets. I believe right now the Jets are 3-point favorites. I'll double check that. But I believe I saw earlier the Jets were 3-point favorites. And it's not the Jets. It's the Bills at the Dolphins. My apologies. But still, Miami's -2.5 right now. I've got the Bills to win this game straight up. I think they're going to win it on the money line. It's a good game. It's a game where being in Miami this time of year isn't a big help to the Dolphins, because everybody's warm. It's not a situation where it's like October or November and Buffalo's now, 20 degrees and Miami's still 85. Like, that's when it gets to a biological advantage. But, if Miami's 90, Buffalo's 80, like, it's not a big enough deal to where the weather should come into a factor. But this is going to be a good game. Like I said, I've got the Bills winning this game via money line. It's not my Jags pack, obviously, because it is a Thursday night game. But I've got the Bills winning this game straight up. Now, up next, I'm going to shift to our NFL betting segment, Jags Pack. Welcome back into the show as we now jump into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, where we got a positive start last week. We started off 3-2, a couple of heartbreakers. I'm not gonna lie to you. That Arizona Buffalo game, that hurts. Like, we got it at +5.5. And you're multiple one play aways from nailing that bet. I mean, first of all, Arizona was up like 17 or 20 points. Then even in the comeback, just keep it within six, fellas. Like, and then you have the last drive where Marvin Harrison Jr. runs wide open, but Kyler's already running for his life. Otherwise, Kyler makes an easy flip to Marvin Harrison Jr. And not only does the +5.5 hits, the money line hits, because as you guys know, if you weren't here for last week's episodes, it doesn't affect at all. Never mind, it doesn't affect our season long bets at all. However, the Arizona over was a juicy number. I think it was 7.5. So that was a number that I was looking at a lot of different places, adding into the bets. One of my outside bets, one of my stay away, because almost two hit too perfectly. But winning at Buffalo was not one of the wins I thought they would get, and they were a second away. If he breaks open a little bit faster, Kyler flips it out of his hand, and even if he gets hit, he drops into Harrison Jr. and they win the game. It's just so much was happening there. We were really close to, but in short, we were really close to being 4-1. But 3-2 week one, it's not bad. Usually the first few weeks of the season is where everybody kind of off. You either get off to a really hot start at the beginning and kind of balance your way out once Vegas kind of catches on, or you start off really bad and then when the numbers kind of settle out, you kind of even your way out. Again, as we said a lot last season, the year before that, 57% is the number you want to hit to be considered a professional gambler. So if you hit 57% of your bets, you can be a professional gambler and make a profit, because you'll lose. And the reason why it's not 51 is because of juice, and you may hit a bet with less juice and lose a bet with bigger juice, and you end up losing your money a different way, and this, that, and a third. But if you get 57%, that'll cover all your juice. You'll be a profitable gambler. You can be a professional gambler and make a living off of gambling. So right now we're at 60%. So we are definitely above that threshold, although it is just week one. But anyway, let's get into our numbers for this week. I actually love our numbers for this week. This is a week, again, I don't think that Vegas has figured it out just quite yet. So we're going to take advantage of Vegas while they are still trying to get their life together. Our number one bet, our primo bet, our lock is Ravens minus -9 at Raiders. I'm sorry, home against the Raiders. They ain't even got to travel. Look, if I've learned anything about this, if I learned anything about the Baltimore team, if I learned anything about Harbaugh, if I learned anything about Lamar, they lose, especially when they lose and they feel they were the better team, as Isaiah Likely stated, this and a third, they come out the next week and they punish whoever's in the way. Las Vegas Raiders are a good team. Las Vegas Raiders are a good culture. They're trying to build a good team. Their starting quarterback is Gardner Minshew. Their starting running back is Zamir White. They have one player anybody would care about, and that's Davante Adams. The Ravens are going to roll here. This number could have been 12.5, and I would have still bet Ravens. Think about it. The Raiders lost by more than this to the Chargers. And the Chargers were trying to figure their life out, figure their scheme out, and the Raiders lost by more than that to them. Now you're going to go into Baltimore for the Baltimore debut. They've had over a week to prepare. They've had over a week to rest. They've had over a week to just sit and stew. And you happen to be the opponent that shows up. This is bad for you. I've got Ravens minus -9. Take the Ravens. Our second game, our second number is Chargers minus -6 at the Panthers. Take the Chargers. Speaking of those Chargers that we just discussed and how they beat the Raiders by double digits. The Panthers are awful. We discussed them on our last topic. The Panthers are the worst team in professional football. I don't think it's relatively close. And if I'm the Chargers, I actually hit this line. It's disrespectful. Because the Raiders are better than the Panthers. And you beat the Raiders by 12. If I'm the Chargers, I take this line as disrespectful and I want to punish the Panthers. Look, now, it's week one. No one's ever as good as they look in week one at the Saints. The Saints are not 37 points better than anybody. And no one's as bad as they looked in week one. Again, the Panthers are not 37 points worse than anybody. However, less than a touchdown. Like, I get it's a West Coast to East Coast travel for the Chargers. I understand that. But the Chargers have the better quarterback. They have the better coach. They have the better offensive line. They have the better defense. They have the better defensive personnel. They have the better GM, the better owner, and the better fan base. Look, the Chargers just flat out better here. I think they're going to win comfortably by 2 touchdowns or more. I think they get away and hide from the Panthers early. The Panthers were already in trouble, and now they're losing, like, Derrick Brown's out for the year. Like, now they're trying to get injured. And so I think the Chargers went here comfortably. Take Chargers, minus -6. Seahawks at Patriots. Patriots plus +3.5. Take the Patriots here. Look, this could be a hard overhead pick. I think the Patriots can win this game all right. Now, I'm not betting the money line on this situation. I'm betting the plus +3.5. However, I would consider, depending on my juice I get, if it's a plus +180 or a plus +190 situation, to take in the Patriots money line outright. I think they can do it. Look, that defense is great. The culture there has definitely changed. You see a beatness. You see a vibrance in the building that you haven't seen in a few years in the Belichickian era. In the Belichick era, you had a team that was not upbeat. They were disciplined, they were tight, they were together, but it was a general lack of excitement in the building when you went into New England. They had the same mantras for 20 years. They were doing the same thing, and when Brady wasn't there, there was no go-between, and the mood generally went down. However, in the Gerard Mayo era, that team was up. They're upbeat. There's multiple videos now of people yelling, "Take them to the hill," at the end of the game. That's a phrase where Gerard Mayo had the team run up and down a hill, or run up a hill at the end of practice as their conditioning test, as their conditioning, and they were yelling, "Take them to the hill." He's installed the selection of the play of yelling certain phrases after the game. Like, Gerard Mayo was a Patriot at the peak of being a Patriot. So if anybody knows what is the culture of New England supposed to be to win, it would be Gerard Mayo. Let's also add into the fact that Jacoby Brissett's a veteran quarterback, and you're looking at a very inexperienced head coach on the other side as well for the Seattle Seahawks. Again, they have to go west to east. 3-hour time difference. I think it's an early kick. It's going to feel like a 9 a.m. kick to those Seattle guys body-wise. The Patriots have an advantage here. I don't think they win this game outright, but I think it's a field goal. Because the number's plus +3.5, give me the Patriots. Saints plus 6 at the Cowboys. Give me the Saints, and I love this number. It might be my second favorite number of no, it's my third favorite number of the week. It's my next number, not the second favorite number of the week. It's my third favorite number of the week. I've got a lot of confidence in this number. Again, the Saints are not 37 points better than anybody. Let's just get that out of the way. However, neither the Cowboys aren't that great either. You know, you got a lot of guys getting paid. Dak Prescott's got his money. CeeDee Lamb's got his money. Ezekiel Elliott's back home in a place he honestly should have never left, which is so weird for Ezekiel Elliott because he's playing on a second Cowboys contract while getting paid from the first Cowboys contract still. That salary's on there. So Ezekiel Elliott's actually showing up on the Cowboys salary table twice. But the Cowboys played against the Cleveland Browns team that, honestly, like I said, you spoke about Deshaun Watson. He's just not good anymore, right? And so that defense at a certain point was getting short fields and all that other stuff. They're going to do that. Now, the Saints' offense is with Clint Kubiak as the offensive coordinator. That looked like a different offense than we'd seen in New Orleans for years. I mean, that looked like peak Sean Payton, where it was innovative, where people popping wide open, where everybody was having fun and smiling. It was like, it was one of those games where that team got to show off that offense, and you could definitely understand the excitement that you got from the New Orleans personnel when they had spoke about the offense and what they wanted to accomplish. Saints plus 6 here is a great number. That means Dallas went by a touchdown. If I had to bet this game, if I had to see this game, I think 6 may be too spot on of a number. We may end up tying here because my brain is saying 30-24 Cowboys victory, which would nail the plus 6 perfectly. You know, you still have a Cowboys defense that is susceptible to the passing game. That offense is going to look really good. It's in Dallas, but it's going to feel kind of a 50-50 split. A lot of Saints fans are going to that game. That's a game that if you're from Louisiana, you understand that the Cowboys fans are deep in Louisiana. And so Saints fans usually stand up to go against them. So a lot of Saints fans are going to that game in Dallas. So it may not be 50-50, but it could very well be 65-35, even a 70-30 situation. And because of which, that is something that I think could help New Orleans there. It's a short trip. It's a, what, 2-hour flight? So it's not a lot of travel there. I think the Saints, I don't think they pick up the win, but I think they make it very, very close. So Saints plus 6 here, take the Saints. And then the fifth number, my second favorite number, Colts at Packers. Packers plus 3. Take the Packers money line here. I think the Packers win this game outright. And that's even without Jordan Love at the quarterback position. I think they win this game outright. It's just something about Indy. I'm not liking what Indy's got going on there. I truly don't love it. What Indianapolis has going on inside the organization. I mean, they had the Texans dead to rights, and they just let them go. And actually, since I got this number, it's actually been bet down to 2.5. So I think the Packers are going to play ball control offense. I think it's going to be a ton, and I do mean a ton, of Josh Jacobs. They're going to run that ball, make the game short. I think Anthony Richardson throws a pick he shouldn't throw. I mean, his stats last week were 9 for 19, 212, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. If he does that, I think the Packers win this game straight up. And I absolutely love this number from Green Bay. Plus 2.5. Again, I think they're going to win the game all right. So whatever number you get, as long as it's plus, I would take that bet. Let's go through it again. You've got Ravens minus 9 over the Raiders. Chargers minus 6 over the Panthers. Pats plus 3.5 over the Seahawks. Saints plus 6 over the Cowboys. Packers plus 3 over the Colts. But up next, we're going to shift to the WNBA and talk about what's going down there as they are barreling towards their playoffs. Welcome back to the show. And now we're going to jump into our WNBA segment. That is always, we're going to start off with the standings. And of course, once the W enters their playoffs, we'll be giving playoff round updates and series updates. But we're going to start off with the standings. Number one, we have the New York Liberty leading as they have had as they have most of the season. Lynx, Minnesota Lynx, three behind them. Connecticut Sun, four from first. Fourth place, we have the Las Vegas Aces. They're seven back. Fifth place, the Seattle Storm. They're eight back. Sixth place, we have the Indiana Fever. They're 11 and a half back. Seventh place, we have the Phoenix Mercury. They're 13 back. Eighth place are holding down the last playoff spot currently is the Chicago Sky. They're 17 back. And then ninth place is the Atlanta Dream. They're one place back. They're one game back from eighth. The Washington Mystics are also one game back from eighth. They're at 10th. The Dallas Wings have been eliminated mathematically. They're at 11th. And then the Los Angeles Sparks, also eliminated mathematically, are in 12th. As you know, this league only has 12 teams. There's 12 players, the best 144 female players in the world, with a couple of exceptions due to some WNBA CBA rules. But there were a couple of exceptions. These are the best 144 players in the world. I still think Liz Cambage is one part of that 144, but we'll never see her back in the WNBA, unfortunately, due to her non-basketball activities. But anyway, into the news. So, Asia Wilson. Congratulations to our future league MVP. Asia Wilson has broken the single season scoring record for the WNBA. She broke a record that was just set last year by Jackie Young. And now Asia Wilson has her eyes set on the first 1,000-point season in the history of the W. It is in range. It is mathematically very in range for her to be the first 1,000-point scorer in WNBA history. She should be the unanimous MVP. No one else should get a vote. Would I think that'd be a weird Caitlin Clark voter? Possibly. Do you think that'd be a strange, I don't even know who else would get a vote. I just, the only person I've seen get legitimate discourse besides Asia Wilson has been Caitlin Clark, and that's been weird to me. Caitlin Clark's going to run away with the WNBA Rookie of the Year. However, I don't know how she gets a vote in the WNBA MVP race. But Asia Wilson, you know, we go through her numbers all the time. We talk about it on the YouTube show. She's like first in scoring, second in rebounds per game, first in blocks. She's top five or so in steals. She's high up on the field goal percentage. Like, she's the best player in the WNBA. I don't even know who's second, and whoever is second, they are so far behind, there might as well not be a second. I mean, this is like LeBron circa 2008 to 2015. You know, before you start really getting that Kevin Durant discourse and stuff like that. Like, there was no second. We're talking Michael Jordan, you know, 1988 to 89 to 96, except for the 2 years he sat out. There was no second. We're talking, you know, like these gaps. We're talking Wayne Gretzky in his prime. Like, whoever is second is so far back that the gap from second to 10th is probably closer than first to second. She's that much better than everybody. Remember in the preseason poll, they did the voting of who's the best this and who's the best that. She won MVP favorite, best offensive player, and best defensive player. The team won best offensive, best defense because of her. You know, the Aces had all the awards anyway, and they struggled through the regular season. Chester Gray was hurt. They never really got back on their grind, and they're not really a regular season team anyway. I think they're going to look differently in the playoffs. But she was the spearhead to this organization. She was a driving force to the whole situation. And said, that's just, like I said, I expect her to be the first 1,000-point scorer in WNBA history. And she continues to be absolute. I think she's unanimous. As Bam Adebayo put it earlier, she should be unanimous for Asia to be WNBA MVP. And she broke against Caitlin Clark, which, you know, all eyes were in the building. The broadcast poorly didn't mention it, disrespectfully didn't mention it when she broke the record. If it was in Vegas, I'm sure the game would have been stopped. But, you know, in Indiana, they try to keep non-Caitlin Clark news out of the airwaves, and especially here on national TV, Caitlin Clark's their darling still, so they're trying to keep all their stuff out of the airwaves. But again, I don't care who it is, that should have been a wreck. That should have been a game-stopping moment. You just set the record for the most points in a season. Like, it should have been stopped. Like, 2K style, soon as the shot goes in, you know, like, confetti falls and, like, horns start going off and everybody's cheering and it goes across the jumbotron. Like, that should have been what happened. And instead, it was barely given. It wasn't even given a mention on the broadcast as it happened. So, disrespectful there. But that will, of course, has been rectified all over social media. Angel Reese, the other candidate for Rookie of the Year, truly, I think she'll come in second. She undergone left wrist surgery for a fractured wrist. She's suffered the injury, as she said on her social medias, falling back on her hand after an N1. And so she said she had two options: either don't get the surgery, face arthritis, or is not really healing properly and being super sensitive, or get the surgery, shut it down the rest of the NBA season, and be ready for the Unrivaled League, which her team still made the playoffs. So I wonder if the Sky make the playoffs, does she consider trying to ramp up her rehab to get back on the floor to experience the playoffs in the WNBA? Because, again, she's scheduled to play in the Unrivaled League, which is the new women's basketball league that is basically owned by players. Like Paige Beckers has a piece, Brianna Stewart, Nafisa Collier. Those ladies are making $100,000 a year to play in the Unrivaled League. So now they don't have to go overseas. They don't have to leave their country. They just move to, I guess, whatever market they're representing for the Unrivaled League. That's how they're going to do it. Like I said, Angel Reese is making 60 some odd K from the WNBA. She's going to make 100K in the Unrivaled League. So, you know, protecting her money, protecting her finances, it would be smarter of her financially to just sit, make sure she's 1,000% ready to go for the Unrivaled League, considering that that is her financial breadwinner at the moment. Outside of endorsement stuff, which she'll be an endorsement darling for years. So if you listen to those standings carefully, you noticed a team in 11th place. That was the Dallas Wings, and they have a superstar, potential superstar, in Arike Ogunbowale on their team. And, you know, that is something that not many people in the WNBA knew about, because we have so much new media, new fans involved in the sport. You got people like, you know, the Angel Reese fans, the Caitlin Clark fans. Those came in supporting Rickia Jackson. This draft class, they're doing what they did for college basketball when they came in as high school players. In order for you to break through that wave, you got to do something either historic. Asia Wilson, Brianna Stewart, so on and so forth, with winning or individual accomplishments, or you have to beat one of those stars in their build. Like, you have to show out on the stage. Arike Ogunbowale on the stage, everybody's watching. Arike Ogunbowale's coming out party to the world was the WNBA All-Star Game, where she breaks the record, I think, for threes in a game. She knows she's got all these point records and this, that, and the third. For what, you know, and everybody went, oh, my God, who's Arike Ogunbowale? And that was, like, her moment to get noticed. But she's been doing this for years. She's one of the best WNBA scorers for years. She routinely averages anywhere from 19 to 22 points a game. It's what she does. She puts the ball in the hole. She's one of the best shooters, one of the best scorers in the league. But she's on the Dallas Wings, and nobody truly cares. I think it's time for her to move on. I think it's time for her to do what Nneka Ogumike did to the Sparks and just say, hey, I don't want to come back. So, I mean, you know, the Sparks had the right to effectively franchise tag Nneka and say, you know, we want you back. And she would have had to either suit up for the Sparks, or she would have had to move on, like sit out of here, whatever. Made it uncomfortable. But she went to management. She was honest. She said, I want to move on. And they let her move on, you know, basically free of charge. If I would have loved to see Nneka Ogumike and Cameron Brink and Rickia Jackson and that squad come together on the Sparks, but hey, it is what it is, right? And so I think for Arike, she needs to go to Dallas and say, hey, I would love to be traded this offseason. Now, where should she be traded to? I wouldn't mind seeing her in Chicago. that's the kind of bucket that Chicago needs, and she's a tough minded player. I know that the head coach over there, Teresa Witherspoon, would love her because of her tough mindedness, and again, how she's always 100%. She's always playing, and she's an absolute bucket. She's like an upgraded version of Kennedy Carter, with less off the court problems. So that would be a good spot for her. I think, honestly, her on the Sparks would be good. You know, her with Cameron Brink. I think she needs to go somewhere where she can come in and just be a bucket. Well, I said Chicago was something that jumped out to me very early. They have high draft pick assets. They can, you know, kind of fill the coffers of the Dallas Wings with her assets. But you've got to do something. Arike Gumbawale's got to do something to get on the national stage, to get people in front of her, to get people noticing her and how great, excuse me, of a basketball player she really is. Because right now she's just wasting away in Dallas. And our last topic for the WNBA is Kathy Engelbert. So she was asked a question about the new fans in WNBA, about the kind of the commentary around the league, the discourse around the league, namely with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And she did not do a very good commissioner job in answering the question. She didn't do a very good commissioner job in kind of quelling the storm, really. She didn't do a good job at any point of doing her job. You know, and you're in a league that has a bunch of issues. So, you know, she was asked, and I'll read part, and I'll read it. Engelbert was a commissioner. She was speaking on a podcast, called Power Lunch, and they asked her about some of the harassment and racially and otherwise of, you know, between players, you know, that's been going through, and especially when it comes to Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Reese spoke earlier this month about how some Caitlin Clark fans have harassed her online, given her death threats, followed her home, created AI-generated naked photos of her. One fan allegedly called Kennedy Carter a ghetto B-word at the team hotel because of her incident with Caitlin Clark. Diamond DeShield was talking about how one fan hoped her spinal tumor would come back due to Caitlin Clark. And basically Engelbert sidestepped all of that. She sidestepped everything and focused on what the rivalry between Clark and Reese can do, similar to Magic and Bird. And so she focused on that directly, and she kind of just sidestepped, like I said, all of the discourse and all of the stuff surrounding the actual question and about the racism. She just focused on the fact that how good it is for the WNBA that these two stars are battling. And everybody lost it. All the players lost it. The WNBA Player Association issued a statement of what they wish Kathy Engelbert would have said. Like, it was hot in the kitchen for her, and it still is. People are writing articles, and Skip just put something out in a league where 2 years ago she makes this statement and it's news for 24 hours and it goes away. And actually, part of her statement is the reason why it's not going to go away. In her product statement, she said, there's no more apathy, people care. There's no more diehard WNBA fan who only cares about the WNBA and is going to be WNBA focused the entire time. It is, you know, people outside of the WNBA care now. It is now a lot of issues of homosexuality in the WNBA and about race and about a lot of things that have nothing to do with basketball, but it is now infiltrated its way into the WNBA. People care now. You can't just do and say anything. And so Kathy Engelbert stepped right into it. Do I think this should cost her job? Of course not. Do I think that she should be, you know, made to publicly apologize, video form, not like, you know, not just put out a statement? I think she should have to long form apologize on a video kind of screen. Yes. Do I think it should cost her a job of commissioner? No. Do I think she's been doing a good job of commissioner lately? Yes. You know, this notwithstanding. But she's had, she's done good with expansion. She's taken her time. She didn't do what I do, which was pop expand, add like four teams at once. She went once. She's going to go with one team a year for 4 years to get to 16. I think the magic number for the league is 20, but she's going to end up going to 16 teams over the next 4 years. Like, she's done a great job recently, hasn't handled some of the growth, the pop growth well, but I think the whole league infrastructure wasn't set up for that. I mean, no company is. In order to grow three times in size overnight, I don't think any company is sustained in that matter. Nothing is, no system is designed to handle something like that. But I think she could have done a better job in that anyway. But again, I kind of gave her a little grace on that, because overnight she became one of the more popular leagues in the world. And so again, I don't think there's a system on the planet designed to handle that necessarily, but I think she could have done a better job at it. All in all, I don't think this comment should cost her job. I do think this was a step in it moment that she should learn from and grow from. But up next, we're going to shift to our Jack's Hot Take, which is about the Colorado Buffaloes football team. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about the Colorado Buffaloes football team, kind of in a free fall right now. They took it on the chin against Nebraska on Saturday. That led to some icky post-game comments from Shedeur Sanders, in which he had a point, but he can't say it. He spoke about, you know, the comment that stuck out to everybody's mind was, how often did Rayola get touched? Which directly throws his offensive line on the bus, but they didn't play well. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't pass block when they needed to. And then on the other side, Nebraska mauled Colorado the entire first half. Colorado made some adjustments in the second half. They ended up winning the second half, actually 10-7. But they got mauled 21-0 in the first half. And then by the time you start the comeback, it's far too little, far too late, and you don't have enough, you know, because again, you can't run the ball. So they're dialing up every exotic coverage, dialing up every exotic blitz they can think of, because I know you can't kill it with just a basic zone run. Like, I know that for a fact. So that makes life difficult, to be kind. And that makes it hard for the Colorado Buffaloes to succeed. Going into this season, I had them at 8-4. And after that Nebraska game, I don't want to seem overreacting, but I do think I had them 8-4, 9-3, and challenging for the Big 12. After that Nebraska game, I got 6-6, and they better hope they get a Pop-Tarts Bowl invite. Just because of just how they look. They have no line. And if it comes to a Pop-Tarts Bowl, I don't think Shedeur is playing. I don't think Shiloh's playing. Travis Hunter probably doesn't play, so on and so forth. And you know what I'm saying? You're looking at Deion running out of the tunnel with, you know, no stars on an already bad team and probably getting thrashed in a bowl game. So that could be a whole different issue entirely, but it's still, Colorado is Colorado now. 6-6 after 4-8, after showing up and improving three wins, year two improving two wins, 5-win improvement in 2 years is massive at any level. However, that with the vitriol and the narrative and the lack of support and the lack of belief in the Colorado program, and with the, let's be honest, media has now turned on Deion attitude that is coming out of the media, he's going to get slandered for this. And people dropping the Nebraska game was like, oh, did he really build a good team, or did he just build a place where his kids can shine? Like, and then that's pretty much what happened. And
you know, people turned on him when he left Jackson State. Now they're getting more and more. They're throwing him into the fire at Colorado. And it's just, you know, they're coming after him. So we'll see how he stands up. We'll see how he responds. From a football perspective, and I think a historic perspective, having... I mean, there's been no first-round pick quarterbacks from Colorado ever. There's been no first-round pick corners from Colorado ever. So he's still going to make history. But if he were to have stayed at Jackson State with Travis and Shador, and they leave, and Shador is a number five pick, and Travis is a number two pick, and you're looking at, you know, two top five picks from the same HBCU, first time ever, and this, that, and the third, it may have changed the narrative on HBCUs, and who knows what would have happened, right? But... you know, he's still going to make history at Colorado. I just think that, you know, a lot of the slander is coming to him is from the wrong perspective. But this team is this team. They're going to go 6-6. I mean, last year they're 6-6. They beat Stanford and hold on another game. So 6-6 is not insane. I think that they close this. I think they close a couple of the games they're supposed to win. You know, they're 6-6, 7-5. You're looking at the Music City Bowl or the... they say Pop-Tarts Bowl. Someone's going to give them a big bowl invite purely because of the fan base and the media attention. And then we'll see Deion in a bowl game. So that's what's happening there. But, you know, my hopes of this team challenging for the Big 12 have been dashed. My hopes of this team, you know, potentially finishing the season top 15 and making a playoff run has been dashed. They are a very okay team, which is fine for Boulder, Colorado, not fine for the national media that's going to continue to slander Deion as long as he's in this space. But that is all I have for you today. This has been a fun show. Like I said, I'm finishing it now, and you'll hear it in probably 15 minutes or less. So this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out. We'll be right back.